got a little gal down in New Orleans, boy, cooking ham hocks and collard greens. You say, keep on chugging, mama, chugging my blues away, yeah.
Hi, I'm Mike Cuthbert, and this is Primetime Radio. Jazz, it is said, was born in the blues. If jazz was born with the blues as mother, then the father was the South that gave them breath. It was only natural then that when Barry Yeoman went looking for the blues to see if they still lived, he headed south. In his original reporting for this series, Barry Yeoman started and we start in North Carolina with Captain Luke, but our blues trip takes us to many locales, Atlanta, New Orleans, and Virginia, just to mention a few, and many other musicians. We hear the story and the music of blues men and women and of a man who's working to keep them and their music alive through what he calls the Music Maker Relief Foundation. All of these folks, no matter what their styles, are doing something relatively simple. They're trucking my blues away.
Let's give a warm welcome for the captain of the ship, Captain Luke.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you.
It's standing room only at Broad Street Cafe, a gathering spot in Durham, North Carolina, with a brick pizza oven and a wide selection of microbrew beers. With midnight approaching on New Year's Eve, the crowd whistles and cheers as a man named Captain Luke approaches the stage. He wears dark glasses, a pinstripe vest, and a nautical cap covered in novelty pins. Captain Luke is considerably older than the musicians who usually play here. He's 82 and has a sinewy build that younger men would envy. His physique comes from a career in manual labor, and also, it seems, from eating leafy greens.
Where you take our plants and greens? Grow right in woods and fields. Looks up like collard greens. Collard greens. Even creasy green. That's what that stuff called. That stuff called poke. Good God Almighty. Salad.
The crowd on the dance floor is mostly baby boomers, but in one corner, at a table, sit many of the musicians on tonight's bill, men in their 60s and 70s and 80s who have spent their entire lives singing the blues. They've sung at drink houses and country stores, often to no one except their friends and neighbors. They listen intently to Captain Luke's dry baritone.
Let me tell you about him. Down in Louisiana, Lord have mercy, where the alligators grow so mean, a little girl swear to the world made the alligator get deep. Poke Sally Daddy, Lord have mercy, poke Sally Daddy. Everybody said it was a shame, because the mama, she was working on the chain gang. Lord have mercy. Come here, baby. Look here. My daddy, he was lazy and do count.
Accompanying Captain Luke on the guitar is a 47-year-old folklorist named Tim Duffy. He has shaggy blonde hair and wears a jacket and fedora in bright colors that suggest Southern folk art. Duffy runs a nonprofit called Music Maker Relief Foundation, which supports about 30 older musicians like these. His job is to make sure they and their music get their due.
These people form the aquifer of the basics of all modern popular music. All the musicians in the South, this melting pot, created jazz and blues in these forms. And it's been a source of constant inspiration for every great modern musical movement ever that's come out of this country.
This is the story of how four older musicians, two of whom had never performed in public until their 70s, are now, later in their lives, spreading great American music throughout the world. It's also the story of a folklorist on a mission to lift these cultural treasures out of poverty and obscurity. The story begins back in the 1930s, on a South Carolina farm where a young man named Luther Meyer learned the value of both hard work and good music. That young man would later take on the name Captain Luke.
One of these days, when my heart gets strong enough, going to pack my clothes. Get out of your door. But until that day, when my heart gets strong enough, you can bet your life that I won't be back no. Here now, what I'm supposed to do?
On the farm, it was fresh because it grew a lot of corn, wheat, and oak vegetables, you know, and stuff like that, and fresh smell down there. We would pick cotton, stuff like that, and I love the smell of that cotton. That cotton smelled real fresh and good. It was kind of hard on your knees. Rows was very long. Put the cotton in the sack. When you get it filled up, you had a big sheet. When you get your sack filled up, you go and empty it on that sheet. The rows were so long, it take you something like 2 days to get out of one row. My uncle, he'd be plying in the field, and I used to follow him in the field and hear him blow his harmonica. He'd hum sometime, and then he'd blow the harmonica and hum a little bit. I enjoyed it. That's why I said, golly, that sounds good. All day long, me and him in that field. I said, well, when I grow up, I'm going to be like my uncle. That's what I said to myself. After I grew up, I thought about that mule that my uncle used to plow. And so I just thought singing about made up a song about him. Old Black Buck. He was good old mule, though. He had more sense than I did. Because when he was plying him, he go to the end of a row. He turns around himself, and when dinner time come, he won't ply no more. He says, "Well, it must be dinner time." Says he ain't gonna ply no more. So he unhooked the plow, and we get on the mule and ride into the house.
Hey, old Black Buck, Randy snort. Buckle wouldn't buckle and the hanks been short. Couldn't be out cold, you're too damn slow. Who made the back band? I don't know. Oh, Lord, help me. Well, I plied my potato with the bull gun fly. Never have seen such railing. But I fly at a stump, a bull give a jump, did it kick me crawl the tail end.
This is Truckin' My Blues Away, a Primetime Radio special brought to you by AARP. Here again is Barry Yeoman.
Captain Luke moved to Winston-Salem, North Carolina in 1940. That's where he lives today, in a public housing project of two-story brick buildings on lots where the grass is mostly worn away. When he first moved to town, he sang gospel with a men's quartet that needed a bass. Later, he befriended a blues man named Guitar Gabriel.
Oh, boy, he was a great guy. He just sit on the porch and just play. He run this kind of halfway drink house, you know. I had a car, see. Me and Guitar Gabriel would get his amplifier and his mic. We'd go from one side of town to another. We go to some of the drink houses, sit and play, and make us a few dollars. Yeah, like that.
Those unlicensed drink houses might have been where Captain Luke's musical journey ended, had he not crossed paths with folklorist Tim Duffy. More on that when Truckin' My Blues Away continues.
Why didn't you be content with the love I gave? Oh yeah, I'd give you my heart. You wanted my mind. Oh yeah, your love scared me to death, girl. Oh, it's the choking kind. That's all it is.
Tim Duffy was a graduate student in the University of North Carolina's folklore program when he first discovered a hidden world of Southern blues musicians.
They got a grant and had sent me out to document a guy named James Guitar Slim Stevens from Greensboro, North Carolina. in his near 80. And he was just a wonderful player. And it was something I couldn't really figure out, because in class, you read the blues were gone. There was a real pervasiveness of the white folklorists that had studied African-American blues of the 60s when Mississippi John Hurt and Son House and those guys passed, that an era had passed and it didn't exist anymore. It didn't make sense when I was seeing James Guitar Slim Stevens, who was born in 1900, who hung out with Blind Boy Fuller, that just played incredible piano, incredible guitar. I asked him if he had any friends. Within months, I knew 10 other great blues artists, and this whole like hidden world of drink houses and juke joints and house parties. And it's like, God, this scene is thriving. And what you realize is the musicians die, but the music doesn't die.
Right before Stevens died in 1991, he told Duffy to look for a musician named Guitar Gabriel, who was himself ill and living in desperate poverty.
I was substitute teaching maybe 10 times in my life, and I was in the inner city of Winston, and I asked my students if they knew a Guitar Gabriel. And one little girl said, he was burned up in a house fire. Someone said, no, he's dead. And this other little girl said, no, he's my neighbor, and gave me a map to the inner city of the projects of a drink house where he lived. So I went there and told him Slim sent me. That was the key word. And I met Gabe, and he came out open arms, says, where you been so long? He's so glad to see you. We're going to go a long way. You got to promise me when I die, bury me with my guitar.
Guitar Gabriel took Duffy into his drink house world, into places completely unfamiliar to middle-class Winston-Salem.
There were these little houses. It's just like a regular little house owned by, like, my favorite one, this guy named Ezel, who ran a drink house. I don't have no idea, for 40 years and never went to jail. When they drink house, you just go in the house, and they have different levels. This was the hardcore one that was open 24/7, night or day. You can go in there. You could go buy a beer for a dollar. They'd have moonshine liquor when they could get it, a shot of vodka. There'd be guys coming in. Preachers would come in and get a drink. Postman would come in and get a drink. There'd be guys sitting on the couch that had been sitting there all week that looked like hadn't moved. You know, they'd be frying fatback or fattening up a possum in a cage in the back of corn, and then they'd be cooking the possum and feeding it to the patrons. And then there was other drink houses that were owned by middle-class ladies that would sell nice little barbecue and you'd be in a nice living room setting. But mostly it was a community place for that immediate neighborhood where people could come, and the person who ran the drink house would give credit. It was like a poor man's bank. So you could drink when a lot of people have limited income, so you could borrow money for to get drinks till the end of the month. Or it was a place where a labor pool where people would gather. If someone, a farmer, needed some people to do some work, would be a convenient place to go wrestle up some day labor. But when Gabe would come in there and play music, everything would just stop, and the drinks would fly, and people would be having fun, performing, and just socializing.
Duffy threw himself into this newfound culture and into Guitar Gabriel's life. The bluesman talked openly about the past, even sharing disturbing chapters like the lynchings he witnessed. After a few months, Duffy made a cassette recording of Guitar Gabriel. The two men began performing together at local bars, sometimes just by showing up and asking to play.
This is Truckin' My Blues Away, a primetime radio special brought to you by AARP. Here again is Barry Yeoman.
You've been gone too long.
Duffy knew nothing about the music business, but he advertised the cassette in a blues magazine, and eventually it made it to several concert promoters. In the last years of his life, Guitar Gabriel received invitations to play in places as near as Charlotte, North Carolina, and as far away as Germany and the Netherlands. And Duffy, who cared more about the blues than about teaching, rarely set foot in a classroom again. When we come back, Captain Luke, an unknown drinkhouse singer, finds himself on tour in Argentina. Plus, an 81-year-old bluesman who still drives a tractor on a Virginia farm when Truckin' My Blues Away continues.
I went to work this morning, and my foreman looked me in the eye. He said, you look mighty sick this morning, boy. You look sick enough to die.
You're listening to a special edition of Primetime Radio, Truckin' My Blues Away. You can watch a slideshow prepared to accompany this entire program, created from original photographs of the musicians, on our website, aarp.org/radio. There are also videos of performances and links to the Music Maker Relief Foundation, where you can obtain much more music from Captain Luke, Boo Hanks, and others. I'm Mike Cuthbert.
This is Prime Time Radio.
I got a little gal down in New Orleans, boy, cooking ham hocks and collard greens. You say, keep on chugging, mama, chugging my blues away, yeah. Sad guitar.
You're listening to a special edition of Primetime Radio, Trucking My Blues Away. Now here again is Barry Yeoman.
As he spent time with Guitar Gabriel, folklorist Tim Duffy met other musicians from the underground drinkhouse world. Among them was Captain Luke, who had spent his entire working life hauling batteries, plastering buildings, and doing maintenance for a commercial bakery. Captain Luke sings popular songs, but he also composes some of his own, despite never having learned to read or write.
Like Taj Mahal would say, every note he sings is a chocolate, hot chocolate note, you know. He doesn't think of himself really as a musician, maybe till later. He always sang and played the juice harp. He is a working man. His thing is, oh, he worked hard all his life, hard labor. And they retired, and he met Gabe, started singing a couple songs. And the songs he chose really reflect the drink house in his community, because he writes some songs like Old Black Buck. He does a lot of Brooke Benton numbers. He does a lot of Amos and Andy style comedy, Albert King, just songs that, you know, are more modern, but that reflect, you know, the people he drinks with and hangs out with.
Over and by the showcase, trying to find a warm place to spend the night. Heavy rains are falling. Seems I hear your voice a calling. All right. A rainy night in Georgia. A rainy night in Georgia. Lord, I believe it's raining all over the world. Raining all over the world.
Captain Luke fondly remembers the first time he met Duffy. It was a meeting that changed his life.
I had just went to the store from a drink house, and I was coming out of the store, I remember. And Guitar Gabriel and Tim come along in his van, and he saw me and he called me and told me to come on, get in the van. And he says, just come on, get in the van. He says, we're going to go in for a little ride. I said, okay. I didn't have anything to do then, you know. And so I got in the van. We went to his place, and we got our first show. That's me and Guitar Gabriel and Tim down in Salisbury, I believe it was. Then we started out from there.
To the hairdresser, and this is what the hairdresser said. He styled one my head and showed the man, but God knows I can grease a head. I told her no. Lord, ever had no long in mind. Folks, she no good with nothing but trouble. She's a bomb there all the time.
I was just doing it for the pleasure, you know. And I was having fun, having, you know, a few drinks, beer and stuff, you know. Oh, man, I was enjoying that to the highest. But I didn't know this was going to come along when Tim come along and scooped us up and give us something real to do.
Duffy realized that he, too, needed something real to do. He had a cheap place to live and no children, and his wife Denise had a corporate job. That allowed him to take a risk. So in 1994, he created Music Maker Relief Foundation to support older musicians who are holding on to the South's great folk traditions. He found them in some out-of-the-way places. On a late August day, six immigrant farm workers are priming tobacco, harvesting the ripe bottom leaves of the chest-high plants on a farm outside Virgilina, Virginia. Driving the blue New Holland tractor is 81-year-old Boo Hanks, who has worked outdoors almost his whole life.
I had been married down here in 4 years. I drive the tractor in the field and help him get his tobacco done. I ain't got old enough to retire yet. I don't know where the retirement is. Because if I find me something to do, I'm going to find something to do anyhow. You ain't catch me doing nothing. I've been working almost 11. But one thing, the reason I try to do something now all the time, for health reasons, to keep myself active. Because at my age now, if I give up, I'm going to give up.
When he's not driving the tractor, Hanks plays guitar and sings, a traditional Piedmont blues that he taught himself on the farm where his father was a sharecropper.
Yeah, a whole lot of people think when I'm playing, it's two guitar playing when they hear it, but it's just one. But I play the bass with my thumb and play the lead with my forefinger at the same time. I woke up this morning, slipped on my highway shoes. First thing I know, my feet had them highway blue. I went out on that highway, but that Greyhound bus had gone. I didn't see my little woman, and I was walking on. Says I walked and I walked till my feet got soaking wet. Hadn't found my little woman, Lord, I ain't stopped walking yet. When that moon to go to mountain, be on my way, gonna roam this highway, baby. I was the first guitar I had of my own for a seed company, selling garden seeds. You could sell garden seeds for the company, and they had prizes, different prizes, for going to have many packages of seeds you sold. And I did sell enough garden seeds to, they got a little beginner guitar, a little small beginner guitar.
Boo Hanks met Tim Duffy through one of his neighbors in Virgilina, a blues fan named Tony Young.
I've become friends with Tim Duffy, a music maker, and I just happened to think about Boo. I said, Tim, I said, they say there's an old black fella down our way that plays the old blues. And he said, well, have you heard him? I said, no. He said, well, go check him out and see what he's got. So I went and told Boo. I said, Boo, I said, there's a fella in Hillsboro that'd be interested in recording you. And I said, I think he's on the up and up. I said, I think it'd, you know, be worth your while to do it. Boo's like, kind of rolled his eyes like, yeah, okay. You know, you don't never know what's coming from anybody. You know, they just pop up out the blue. So, yeah, I got this business opportunity for you. So he took me down there to his little trailer. He got out this old guitar. He started playing. And I'm not a blues expert, but I recognize the song he was playing was Blind Boy Fuller. I said, yeah, that's old Blind Boy Fuller. Well, he grinned that I recognized who it was. I think he liked it that I knew it. Oh, so I called Tim up. I said, Tim, I said, you need to record this guy. I said, he's a real deal.
I'm blue, won't be blue always. Cause the sun gonna shine, baby, in my back door one day. I'm gonna lay my head on.
Duffy recognized Boo Hanks' music as some of the purest Piedmont blues he had ever heard. He arranged for Hanks to record his songs with Dom Flemons, a rising young star who performs with the Carolina Chocolate Drops.
Boo came down with Tony and then his nephew Pooh. Yeah, I had my jug and my guitar set to go and my banjo just in case. And then he just started playing, and it was marvelous. We just bust into this session. We do, I don't know, 20 tunes in like, you know, 2 hours or so. When he came in, Tim and I were just amazed to see such a songster of that type that was still active and that no one had ever heard about. God, he's just killer. He'll play for hours and hours. Like, I mean, you just let him go, he'll just He'll just go and play it. And that's how we do every session. He just sits down and says, all right, boys, what do you want to do? You want to play it? Okay, here we go. And then keep on trucking. Keep on trucking, mama.
Hey, keep on trucking, mama. Trucking my blues. Keep on trucking, baby. Every night and every day. I got a girl down New Orleans that's trucked out, the girl you ever seen. Say, keep on trucking, baby. Trucking my blues away, yeah, honey. I had a girl, she's a little and low. Hey, little girl, she's a little and low. Hey, little girl, she's a little and low. Boy, she used to love and now she don't know more. Keep on trucking, baby. Trucking my blues away, I mean. Said guitar. Yeah, I got a gal down New Orleans. Yes, I do. I got a gal down New Orleans. I got a little girl down New Orleans, boy, cooking ham hocks and collard greens. Say, keep on chugging, mama, chugging my blues away, yeah.
Of course, folklorists have recorded traditional musicians for decades. With some notable exceptions, they have rarely gotten too involved in their subjects' lives. Duffy wanted to do things differently. He was particularly concerned that so many of the musicians he met were living in desperate circumstances.
And when I go to pick these guys up, they're more interested in getting some medication for his wife. And we'd miss a gig because we had to go pawn the guitar to go to get the medicine, go borrow another guitar to make the show. And I'd say, I loved hanging out with these traditional artists, these elderly artists, but it was saddened that the greatest traditional musicians equaled utter poverty.
That trailer where Boo Hanks showed off his music? It had no toilet or running water. Music Maker, with help from the Jazz Foundation of America, replaced it with one that has indoor plumbing. Likewise, Music Maker has paid Captain Luke's phone bills, furnished him with a used car, and helped others with their daily expenses. As Duffy's reputation grew, he heard from festival promoters who wanted to showcase Music Maker artists. Captain Luke, who had been surviving entirely on Social Security, found himself on tour to France, Switzerland, even Argentina.
Down in Argentina, boy, they've treated me like a king down there. Down in Argentina, oh boy, they really love me. Gosh, I wish I had some of those photos to show you how they had me all wrapped up like a duck on a June bug. They had me all wrapped up like a duck on a June bug. Oh, they just all over me. They loved my voice.
I know. You're past my way again. It's just a matter of time.
I had one lady come square down between my legs. Told me my voice gave her goose pimples or something, she said. I said, thank you.
As for Boo Hanks, he still reports to work on the farm at 5:30 every morning during the harvest season. But he also performs on the festival circuit. Hanks tells his friends that playing before a large audience is not that much different from picking in his own living room. Here's Tony Young.
He's been all over the world. You know, he's been to Paris, France, been to New Orleans, been to St. Louis, New York, and played. And he still has got the same ego, which is none.
It don't bother me, not a bit. Wouldn't care if it, a million, that wouldn't bother me. No more than five or ten. I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway. And I mean, I ain't got that much confidence in myself.
I tell everybody, I said, we from the country. I said, we don't have enough sense to be overwhelmed by the bright lights in big city.
I want boogie. Boy, we got that.
This is Truckin' My Blues Away, a primetime radio special brought to you by AARP. Hi, I'm Mike Cuthbert. This is Primetime Radio. Welcome back to Truckin' My Blues Away, a visit to the birthplaces of jazz and the blues that inspired the only original music form that grew up in the U.S.,
Barry Yeoman, award-winning contributing editor for AARP the magazine, is our guide as we continue Truckin' My Blues Away.
For 16 years, the Music Maker Relief Foundation has worked with older Southern musicians whose deep talents have long gone unrecognized and unrewarded. Some, like Captain Luke and Boo Hanks, played only for neighbors and friends during most of their lives. Others have performed publicly for decades. On a rainy Thursday night, a line of hungry customers spills out the door of Fat Matt's Rib Shack in Atlanta. When they reach the counter, they place their orders and grab a table. Then they wait for their meals to arrive. At the far end of the restaurant, a band called Chicken Shack plays everything from gritty Chicago blues to smooth jazz standards. The band's keyboardist is a compact man wearing a brown fedora and a smile that borders on the beatific. His name is Eddie Tigner. He's been surrounded by music for most of his 83 years.
Yeah, my mother, she was a pianist. She played piano. Like, you know, Bell House, Boogie Woogie, Vanna Coal Miner, out of a town called Markwick, Kentucky. In Kentucky, everybody had hogs. At certain seasons, they would kill a hog. Then all the women would get around. I'll make the sausage. Another hog they'd take, the men would take it, they'd dig a deep hole, build a fire upon it, and sometimes they would be roasting that whole pig. Mama and sometimes a guitar player would show up, you know, and they were entertaining the people out there. Most time, I mean, they go inside the house, but a lot of times they'd play outside in the backyard. They would take the piano and move it outside, you know, the old raggedy piano. Some of the keys play, some of the keys didn't play. It was kind of weird, but it sounded good.
Come and lay down by my side till the early morning light. Oh yeah. All I'm taking is your time. Help me make it through the night. I don't care what's right or wrong.
Tigner himself didn't take up the piano until he joined the Army during World War II. Stationed in Maryland, he booked entertainment for the troops, including the famous rhythm and blues group, the Ink Spots. By the time he completed his service in 1947 and moved back to Atlanta, Tigner had learned enough chords to play in public.
Started doing vaudeville shows for a while down here in a theater called 81 Theater. It used to be on Decatur Street. A fellow named Snake Anthony was having it. We was doing vaudeville at that time. Of course, line, comedian. It was like a show within the theater, man. Between pictures, I mean, we would put the show on. Started playing with him, and I would travel with him, like, through Augusta, Georgia, Athens, you know, Birmingham.
Tigner's break came when he was tapped to play keyboards with a band named after the original Ink Spots. It was one of several groups that toured under the same name. Tigner and his bandmates performed in hotel lounges and on military bases, often hitting 48 states in a single year. With his wife, Ollie, Tigner would drive from one engagement to another, often very long distances.
You know, couldn't hardly sleep, especially when he's going about 500 miles. I had to keep an eye on him because he'd be driving and he'll doze off and I'd hit him with my knee to wake up.
At each hotel, the Tigners would settle in for a week or two. They tried to bring with them the comforts of home.
I had me a crock pot and I would do my own. Put my crock pot on, whatever I want, Gibson and Rice. And I loved Gibson and Rice back then. When I leave to go downstairs to the club, my Rice and Gibson on. When I come back, it'd be well done.
You're listening to a special edition of Primetime Radio, Truckin' My Blues Away. Now, here again is Barry Yeoman.
By the time Tigner quit touring in 1987, he had spent 40 years playing professionally, but he still had no retirement fund. He settled back into Atlanta and performed around town, mostly for tips. A few years later, he met a younger blues man named Danny Mudcat Dudek, who shared Tim Duffy's passion for older Southern musicians. Mudcat, as his fans call him, found both Tigner and his music infectious.
Wow, you know, you can't separate the person and his music, especially with this man here, because you, when you're in his presence, you can't help but smile. You can't help but be happy and joyful. And when he plays, it's the same thing. So if you were blind and you didn't even speak with him and you just heard him play, you would just be so joyful.
I say M. I say M-O. M-O-P. M-O-P-P.
Mudcat got Tigner a regular Sunday night engagement at a bar called the Northside Tavern, and he introduced Tigner to Tim Duffy. Tigner's music filled Duffy with nostalgia.
When I grew up in Connecticut, traveling with my parents, you go to the Holiday Inn, there would be a lounge act, and there would be this person you didn't even think about that playing lounge music. Now, in retrospect, I would love to go to a Holiday Inn and go to lounge and see Eddie Tigner playing the blues. It's just a style that was part of American life, like the piano bar guy, till just about 10 or 15 years ago. Now it's gone.
Duffy knew that music fans would love Tigner's mixture of blues and jazz. At 74, Tigner made his first trip to Europe. He remembers playing an outdoor festival in Lugano, Switzerland.
Verbally, you can't communicate with them. So, I mean, I said, I wonder how they're going to enjoy the music, you know, because that some of them don't speak English. But after the first act went on, I mean, they raved so. I mean, I said, well, they must have understood it, you know.
Second time I went was in Paris, France, and then we went into Germany. I've been in Germany about 4 or 5 times. And I done been maybe about 4 or 5 different countries. But I love Paris, and I love Germany. And I just thought, I said, now, when I did not World War II, we fought the Germans. And now I'm going to entertain them. I mean, that was amazing, you know? And they love us over there. They really do. They love us over there.
For Tigner, one of the best parts of traveling in Europe has been performing with other older musicians, feeling like a part of a bigger community.
And everybody that we all go together, everybody love each other. You know, it's a family. That's what it's all. It's a family.
That's no small thing. Music maker artists often talk about the joy of performing together and the warm relationships they build in the process. Seeing this develop has given Duffy some of his greatest satisfaction.
Instead of being so isolated and alone and elderly in a low-income house, you know, playing a music that really no one cares about, now they feel part of something bigger and they're part of this organization that cares about this, and they have fun learning about each other, set up shows where they play and get to become friends, and gives them some purpose.
When he wasn't on tour with Music Maker, Eddie Tigner worked at an elementary school cafeteria. Here's Mudcat.
He was a favorite of all the kids. In fact, there were a lot of kids who might be labeled as troublemakers. The teachers couldn't reach them. The parents couldn't reach them. The counselors couldn't reach them. But they would open up to Eddie Tigner because they felt comfortable with him. And he would give them pieces of wisdom, and it really helped their lives.
In 2008, something happened that finally led Tigner to retire from the school system.
I would forget sometime a plate or a dish of food, and I have to come back to pick it up. I did about 3 or 4 times. I didn't pay any attention, you know. A doctor sent me to a head doctor. They wrote in that I was old-timer. And I asked the doctor, I said, what is that? What is old-timer?
Tigner asked his doctor what it meant to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
He said, well, if you don't know, Eddie, you'll find out. I haven't found out yet. I said, do I stop playing? She said, no. She said, you just keep playing, you know. I said, well, Alzheimer's, I said, it's supposed to be something that you forget. She said, yeah, but you won't forget your music.
When we come back, a New Orleans musician finds grace in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina when Truckin' My Blues Away continues.
This is a primetime radio special brought to you by AARP. Performance videos, a slideshow that accompanies the program, and much more are available on our website, aarp.org/radio. I'm Mike Cuthbert. This is Prime Time Radio.
Get down to a lean boy cooking ham hocks and collard greens. You say, keep on chugging, mama, chugging my blues away. Yeah. Sad guitar.
You're listening to a special edition of Primetime Radio, Truckin' My Blues Away. Now, here again is Barry Yeoman.
I used to listen at my daddy talk about how they used to hobo and hitchhike the train and stuff like that. I said, yeah, I'm going to hobo the train like my daddy did. And so around about 3:30, he come through. I took my little bag and put it underneath the back of the house, underneath the house, so my mama wouldn't see it. So, yeah, that, during that time, that's when the old train went to charcoal. I hear him coming. Whoop, 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 whoop. I said, Dad come. Dad come. I said, I ain't gonna miss this.
Yeah, baby, don't you wanna go? Baby, don't you want to go? Don't you wanna go down home, baby? Sweet home, New Orleans.
Little Freddie King, the 69-year-old king of New Orleans country blues, is playing the guitar and telling stories in a shotgun apartment in the city's Upper Ninth Ward. His walls are plastered with posters and photographs from his life as a performer. In the 1950s, as a teenager, King threw his clothing into a 50-pound flour sack and rode the rails from Macomb, Mississippi to New Orleans. He taught himself blues guitar by slowing down the records on his Sears Roebuck phonograph. He found work repairing automobiles. And at 19, he got his first gig at a bar called Irene's.
We packed the house. It was a big job to do because I would get nerves and everything. Everything would come into my mind. You're not going to make the note right. You're not going to play the song right for to satisfy the fans out there. And I would get something to build my nerves up. So actually what I would get is this year, Must I Tell It? Muscat Wine? I get me a fifth of muscat and sip on it and get kind of high, and that would build my courage and my nerves up. And then that's how I got around all the people and everything. They all the excitement, it didn't take effect on me. And I kept a fooling with the wine and everything until I got hooked on it. I got to the place where I couldn't do anything unless I had me a drink. And then I drank it so heavy and so much of it till I was killing myself.
Come on, go with me, babe. Down our sweet home, New Orleans. Come and go with me, baby. Down our sweet New Orleans. Well, they got the guys all down there know how to treat their queen.
The joints where Little Freddie King got his musical start were far from the tourist bars of the French Quarter. One was officially called the Busy Bee, but King endowed it with its more famous nickname.
The Bucket of Blood, I'll go over to talking about the Busy Bee, so I gave it the name of the Bucket of Blood. And every Saturday, Sunday, or Friday night, somebody was shot, somebody was cut, or somebody was stabbed. Every night somebody got killed or they got butchered up so bad, you know, hospitalized. And so the only way I survived from it, They had the, you know, the big Rocco jukebox. It was sitting in a corner. And I would go behind the jukebox when the battle stopped. And that's how I would keep from getting shot and get hit by a ball, because I'd be behind the record player.
In the crucible of those rough bars, King became one of New Orleans' most talented bluesmen. He even toured Europe with John Lee Hooker in 1976. King blended the Delta blues of his native Mississippi with the city's more urban rhythms to produce a raw sound that's often described as gut bucket.
No, I don't know. Just don't know what to do.
Listening to a special edition of Primetime Radio, Truckin' My Blues Away. Now, here again is Barry Yeoman.
Yeah.
As with many bluesmen, great talent hardly meant an easy life. Along with his drinking problem, King endured a difficult marriage and was even stabbed and shot by his jealous wife in the 1980s.
Then the judge told him, said, what you gonna do, you gonna have to do time. And you pay so much, but you still got to do so much time. So now, only one thing, if you go and babysit your husband and take care of him and give him the first choice treatment, we won't give you the time. He can bond you out and you have to pay the lawyer. And so he got her out, and sure enough, she came to the hospital. And she come to the hospital and see me. She come to be there every day to see me. And tell them when they discharged me, she was right there for me. She did everything she could do. She did just like she told the judge, and she did that. Then until I got back up on my feet, thank God. So everything was all right, so we never had another fight. She quit drinking. And I quit drinking because I had to, because everything was all blowed apart and plastered top, you know, and patched the bottom and everything.
By the 1990s, King was clean and sober. But like many bluesmen, he was also impoverished. His house was falling in, and he had medical expenses he couldn't pay.
All right, so my drummer found about Tim Duffy, you know, the music maker. You know, so he came out that evening when he got off from work. He said, Freddie, say, and he said, I'm going to call him or either email him, you know, and see if I can get some help from them.
Duffy recognized that financial assistance would help little Freddie King continue making music. So his foundation paid some of King's most pressing bills, and that arrangement lasted for years. In 2005, Hurricane Katrina destroyed King's home and belongings. Exiled to Texas, he missed his guitars, missed playing those gut bucket blues. That period could have devastated him.
Yes, I'm only.
Instead, Katrina brought grace into little Freddie King's life as he witnessed the generosity of those who love his playing. Gibson guitar and music maker replaced his instruments. A Gibson B.B. King Lucille guitar arrived at his Texas apartment.
I grabbed that box and I was just like a little bit of baby when Santa Claus was coming to me. I couldn't get home fast enough to bust the box open. Got there and I played all the evening and half the night. I didn't take my eyes off. I slept on one side of the bed and put it on the other side.
That's not all. The Recording Academy's relief fund, Music Cares, replaced King's amplifier. The nonprofit Sweet Home New Orleans paid for his return to the city he loves. Habitat for Humanity arranged for him to live in a rental apartment in Musicians Village, the Ninth Ward neighborhood where he's been named a master musician in residence. King says this outpouring has transformed him and his music.
Actually, it made more greater than what I was. And for God to give me such a blessing to spare my life and run me through all those tribulation or change to put me back to work again. So that makes it more better for me. And I feel better playing the music, you know what I mean? And my soul and my spirit is more strong.
Little Freddie King's drummer and manager still books most of his gigs, but Music Maker has recorded King and hired him to play in Guatemala and Costa Rica. In the process, he and Duffy have grown close. They both describe their time together in reverential language.
It's special when you're on the road with these guys and you can spend 5 hours at a hotel, you know, after lunch, just talking about life. It's wonderful spending time with Freddie King on the road. My brother wrote something once about these guys. It's like looking at a familiar rock, and then when they get on stage, the rock sprouts 9 wings and starts soaring through the heavens, and you're just, you know, uplifted, and your life has changed, and you feel good about yourself.
I said, Tim, thank you so much. I'm telling you, I love him to death. I mean, he is 100, and he's a straight-up man. I love him to death, I'm telling you. And he's just like a brother.
Hey, I was wondering, I don't know if we can do it or not without the drums.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I can, I'm not the greatest guitar player, but, you know, where you do that fast single-string stuff. Maybe if I back you up, would that help?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With those hard rock and blues, where you go,
right.
You
want to
try one of them?
Yeah, that'll be good.
Well, give me a group.
Little Freddie King and Tim Duffy at Musicians Village in New Orleans. Originally, Duffy set out to preserve the roots of American music and support some of the older musicians who play it. What he created in the process was a family. I'm Barry Yeoman.
Thanks for listening to this special edition of Primetime Radio. For more on this story, including video and photographs, visit us on the web at aarp.org/radio. And you can find more information about our weekly radio program at aarp.org/radio. This program was produced by Richard Ziegler and Barry Yeoman. The executive producer is Janelle Haskell. Our engineer was Dave Tilley of Bogue Sound Studios in Durham, North Carolina, with production help from Ben Pizzuto. Special thanks to Rachel McCarthy. Additional support for this project comes from Filmmakers Collaborative, with some funding provided by a grant from the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more information about Music Maker Relief Foundation, go to musicmaker.org. I'm Mike Cuthbert, and this is AARP's Primetime Radio.
What in the world do you think?